Thank you, Ganga. I modified the title slightly because I want to stress we've got a lot of science about soil trace element risk now. We have the basis for making scientifically based recommendations for dealing with contaminated urban soils. And if we use that knowledge, we can provide advice to homeowners, to children, gardeners, the cities. The reason we say urban soils, I'll show some country soils that are contaminated too, but urban soils is because urban environments are the source of extreme contamination. I mean, every stack for the history of our urbanization has emitted the volatile elements, lead, zinc, cadmium, and arsenic. The concentration declines from the source. We had all the heating, but also the vehicle. And then we have paint debris. Lead was used in paints at least till 1978. And wherever it fell, it became part of the soil. We also have the one that was used to be out in the country, orchard lead arsenate sprays in orchards, which then became suburban. One of my colleagues in Food and Drug bought a house in New Jersey that happens to have been on an orchard. He's got 50 ppm arsenic in his garden soil, where it should have about 2 or 3 because it's on soil texture. Cities are a locus of mercury contamination because people had thermometers, so it's all around. Polycyclic aromatic hydrocarbons, not just from the stacks, but also from all of our grilling, the PCBs, the polybrominated diphenyl ethers, all these are dispersed by all of the humans, so they're in our cities. Wherever there's a local emitting industry, you can have a local highly contaminated area. But one of the most important principles is this business about local dust. Indoor dust can be much more contaminated than outdoor soil, and the youngest children play indoors until they're old enough to actually be allowed to play outdoors, so they can have high exposure to more highly contaminated dust than we have in our outdoor gardens. The problems we've been able to identify from contaminants in urban gardens include the issues about excessive lead absorption by children. Although there are very few examples of overt poisoning of children related to a soil source other than smelting, not from other garden activities, we have a few areas where zinc was high and soil pH was very low, and so vegetable crops were chlorotic and harmed. And we have a few locations with high cadmium, where cadmium could be excessive in garden foods in acidic gardens. So we have arsenic is like lead. It's highly localized and viscous through eating soil, so we have to consider that as well. This picture from Consumer Reports of a child in a dusty real world. Everything around the child can bring lead to the child. This was, again, the 78 child before we started having removal of lead from gasoline and then removal of lead from canned food. And then we have new paint, but all the old paint was still there, and so children kept getting poisoned. I started working on this urban soil lead pollution problem in the late 70s with Howard Melke, who was at a university in the Baltimore area. He taught biogeography, and so he was able to have his students collect soils in order to get a passing grade in the class, so we had so many hundred samples of that. But they were more suburban, so we needed to get some inner city. So we fortunately, while there was still an urban gardening program in USDA, we got an addition of money. I paid him for a couple of summers, and we hired some technicians who got us inner city samples. And these are where the lead was above the average or below the average. And you'll see that there's a pretty good concentration in the inner city. When you look at it from this point of view, this is the distance from the center of Baltimore, and then the statistical distribution of lead, you'll see that the median was above 600, or was 664 ppm in this inner city area. It went up to 10,000, 11,000. But look down here. Even when it was quite distant, there was another garden with 10,000. I've got a rural garden in Prince George's County, it was 40,000 ppm lead because of paint. So depending upon unique contamination sources, paint beside a house, garden put beside the house instead of out in the back, then you can have these extreme levels. Zinc, cadmium were correlated with lead, fairly well correlated, but the cadmium was always a very small part of the zinc, so that in Baltimore there was no site that would have had, not one sample would have been a cadmium risk. Here's this site I mentioned, 4.5% lead in the surface. Depending on which side of the house, you had more or less. Got deep enough, they hadn't tilled it, so it wasn't as contaminated. Well, we try to recommend what we've called good urban gardening practices. If those are followed, we believe the research says, proviso that I'll say leafy vegetables, carrots, and related crops would be the ones that don't fit this. But everything else could be grown on a substantially contaminated soil without moving more lead into your body. EPA has concluded that living in an area where the bare soil play area is above 400 ppm lead, it may increase blood lead in the children. And if the grass area is 1200 ppm or more, it may increase. There's no statistical model that verifies that, but that is a policy call. And again, the basis of that is soil ingestion. And that's why much of the rest of my talk will focus on eating soil. The bottom statement there, that careful urban gardening need not increase lead risk to children, I think is a valid statement, and I'll show you some ways that we've dealt with that. In order to understand risk about lead, you have to understand absorption of lead in humans. This is a report where human volunteers were fed at zero a soluble lead isotope dose. They either had a breakfast meal before or a lunch meal after. So an hour after, or up to 3 hours, or at least 2 hours before, having eaten something, very strongly reduced the absorption of lead. So 60 to 80% absorbed in different studies on fasting, and that's the only thing toxicologists want to talk about. Fasting, lead, water soluble. Whereas when it's eaten with food, particularly if it's eaten with whole wheat muffins that are high in phytate and fiber and calcium and so on, the absorption is much lower. Two studies with lead incorporated into food fed to people showed that expected very low absorption. So then we got some people to eat soil. This is from the Bunker Hill Superfund site, Madaloni et al.'s paper. People were either fasted or fed. This is the standard breakfast, egg, toast, coffee, and so on. And you'll see that the absorption of lead with a minor meal has dropped tenfold. So if you're presuming it's 70% absorption the way the toxicologists do, and it's really only 2.5, you may be overstating the honest risk. We have another kind of logic to attack this question, and that is, what happens if we take the bad soil away and bring in clean soil? Back in the 80s, we got a senator who got interested, Kennedy, and he arranged funding at EPA. It was a $15 million program. We actually removed from half of the population 1 year, and then they got their soil removed the next year. So we have here pre-abatement blood leads for controls, that is the second year removals, dust-only removal in the home, or total soil replacement. And the soil was 1,900 ppm lead. 1,800 ppm lead. There was a small, significant decline due to removal and replacement of soil with nearly 2,000 lead. I think this kind of finding, and the fact that the two other cities, Cincinnati and Baltimore, that had only 500 ppm and had no significant change in blood lead in the children who were living in these areas, is a clear statement that the extreme statement about 400 is going to cause your child to be poisoned is overdoing the data. I've said that, I'll go on. So then, Kirk will probably talk about this study we did at Joplin, Missouri. Soils were actually treated to reduce lead bioavailability. It was a big study that Bill Birdie and Jim Ryan headed up. Many people contributed to. Mattaloni and Graziano did the feeding study. Again, here we have a test of fasted people fed either untreated control soil or phosphate-treated soil. Treating the soil in the field, mixing it well, 3 years later, 69% reduction in absorbed lead using a stable isotope technique. Again, Kirk will probably talk about this, but they've done a great deal of work to try to understand formation of pyromorphite and other chemical forms of lead in soil which may have low bioavailability and show why we have less observed risk than a toxicologist would assume. And a toxicologist would assume that everybody in the city must be dead. So much lead, so much cadmium, so much mercury. I stress, and Gonda's work has demonstrated, the value of compost. When compost is added to soils, it reduces the risk in multiple ways. The first point is that in an untilled area, the lead is highest on the surface from both automotive exhaust and from paint. And so if you're going to incorporate with a rototiller, you're going to remove the high lead from the surface. So the high exposure is obviated by that. The phosphate and the iron and the compost and the organic matter can cause transformation of the chemical species of lead that are present into lower bioavailability forms. When you apply compost, you're going to have strong grass, which means you can't get dirt in your mouth very easily. Now, all the risk depends on eating the soil. Then that's a reduced risk. And we always say that when you know the lead is richest near the house, it's for two reasons. One, paint fall, but then even on masonry homes with no lead paint, it's highest beside the house because surface tension collects the particles that from the automotive exhaust on the house. They get washed off with rainfall, and they end up beside the house. So it's much worse with paint, but any domicile, any wall causes collection of lead. I now want to show you the story about carrots. Eaton Codling in our lab did the work on the peeled carrot versus the peel versus the shoots. You'll see that in carrot, on orchard soils that are quite rich in lead, they actually accumulated lead in the peeled carrot. I thought originally it was going to be in the peel, just dust particles on the peel, but it wasn't. It was inside. We worked with Kirk to characterize that. So you take the carrot, you then, because the X-ash, you can only do so many points before you have to quit with the time, and that section was run. So you can see, again, we're looking at this. So the lead is massively accumulated in the xylem part of the carrot. It makes sense mechanistically. Lead is absorbed by the roots. It goes to the xylem to the leaves. Energy goes to the carrot outside of the xylem. And so it says that any root vegetable, which is an expanded hypocotyl, carrot, turnip, radish, rutabaga, and so on, are going to have that situation. We did a study with romaine lettuce, or lettuce, with Baltimore soils, up to 5,000 ppm lead. And when I added biosolids compost, rich in iron and phosphate, I knocked the lead way down. This complements the stuff that Ganga has done. I have to say that this was done back in the early 80s. Before gasoline lead was no longer a problem, so all these numbers are inflated by a couple ppm. That's so you can't believe most of the data before 2000 about lead in plants and so on. So what am I saying about the science-based advice for gardening in soils? First is the crop selection. Many of us say that below 500 ppm, grow anything you want, wash it with the care of a home cook to remove dirt so you're not eating the soil that might have been out there. When it's higher, you can actually measure the dust adherence on the leafy vegetable. Small clay-sized particles actually get stuck in the waxy layer on the surface, and you can't wash them off even with soap and water and acid. So you're going to eat a certain amount of soil when you eat leafy vegetables. So if you have higher lead, you make raised beds. Raised beds are increasingly popular and get around all of the soil limitations. If you get a clean soil or a STA-rated compost, a high-quality material, then you can grow all the things you need to, that is, your carrots and so on, your leafy vegetables, your herbs, grow those in your raised bed. You use mulch on the soil around the raised bed so you don't stir up a lot of dust and your children are walking and playing on the mulch, not on the soil. Above about 1,500 ppm, it takes more care to do that. If you're only an adult family, there's still no justification to be concerned about that lead if you use a raised bed for the crops which need a raised bed and avoid eating dirt. Most adults don't deliberately eat dirt anymore. I want to stress again the crop differences. The only crops which have been shown to reliably have increased lead are the leafy vegetables and herbs, the root vegetables and expanded hypocotyls. Potatoes do not have increased lead on those orchard soils that I showed you with the very high accumulation in the xylem. Potato was not increased in lead. Fruit and seed crops are extremely low again because of the translocation mechanism in plants. On top of that, lead in food has much lower absorption than used by EPA in their models. I wanted to say something about phytoextraction. You know, I'm the guy to introduce the idea of phytoextraction, and it really, really angers me that people have tried to make a deal out of lead phytoextraction. Only if phosphate is severely deficient in an acid soil can you get much actual uptake by plants of lead. Even an isolated clone of ragweed could do the uptake under that condition. But most of you know that Raskin got a patent for phytoextraction of lead for Phytotech. They eventually went bankrupt, $4.6 million, because you can't do it without adding EDTA to the soil. If you add EDTA to the soil, I've recently made a new estimate of the cost using the cheapest EDTA you can get in the world market. It's still $20,000 a hectare a year to add the EDTA that Phytotech showed was necessary. Because of the proven leaching of lead to groundwater at these kind of phytoremediation, according to Phytotech sites, it is not permitted in the U.S. or the EU. It was a bad idea. The hell of it is, it's all over the web. One of our colleagues decided she'd make a cartoon because there's so many web hits about sunflowers picking up lead. It never did. Anybody who made a measurement knows that it didn't. The reason that Raskin started with working with sunflowers because weed showed it takes up too much cadmium. So he said, well, hell, we'll study that. And he studied Indian mustard. It was studied by Banuelos out in California. Anyhow, sunflower pixie dust, it's got to be something like that because it surely doesn't work. And she made a poster that summarizes the evidence. We have an EPA bulletin leaflet that says lead phyto doesn't work, but many other phytoremediation technologies are quite successful. Now we come to the issue of soil testing. There are two points I want to make. I'll show you this first. We made a modification where we designed the test based on the results of the Joplin soil. And so in the Joplin soil, we had demonstrated lower bioavailability to humans. So when we made a system that extracted with that proportionality, most garden and even orchard soils, because these are fertilized and tilled and have chance for reaction, had low bioaccessibility. An untilled house-side lead-contaminated soil on the Beltsville Reservation had higher, because you don't have the multiple processes that lead to formation of in lower bioavailability species. Part of the reason that we stress this is because at pH 2.5, you get results that agree with the human study. At pH 1.5, you don't, and your last speaker today is going to actually show us some more data about the effective pH. Now let's move quickly to DDT and PCBs and urban soils, which of course are much higher than rural. It was beautifully proven back in the 70s that by using a barrier for vapor transfer, that soybeans and other crops had essentially no DDT or PCBs in their shoots if you stopped vapor transfer. It's not uptake, it's evaporation and then collection on the waxy surfaces. This is another picture of that. That is that the more volatile compounds can move into the carrots in the field compared to the heavier compounds that are not nearly as volatile. So we know that if we want to stop uptake, really the only crops that are really significantly contaminated are the root vegetables and carrot more than anything else based on studies of DDT because its waxy, fatty, lipid surface, the peel layer, sucks up hydrocarbons very nicely. So we have to be, if we have urban soils, particularly if they're high in lead, raised bed garden with clean soil gives you the chance to avoid all of the organic contaminants as well as the inorganic. So what do we do when we have a problem, urban soil or rural soil, as I showed you? You can't just ignore rural soils because if they had a paint contamination or a nearby industry, they could have contamination or an orchard. So many are contaminated and require consideration. A few crops require particular attention. The Xylem business shows we have mechanisms, and the more mechanisms we understand about why crops differ and soils have lower bioavailability, the better we can provide advice to our customers. The bioavailability is actually much lower than is in all of the EPA modeling, so we have a lot of safety built in. As I said, the feeding tests with lead incorporated in kidney or spinach showed that crop lead was extremely low bioavailability, so that alleviates that interest and concern. Always the first limit is going to be to protect children from ingested soil. Depending on bioavailability, if it's a smelter site with no remediation, it's going to be more highly bioavailable. If it's an urban garden with lots of compost application, it's going to have low. I've said these. I want to go to a few pictures of raised beds. I got these off the web. Everybody knows somebody who has a raised bed. We say don't use CCA lumber to make your raised bed. Don't use creosote lumber to make your raised bed, just on principle. Even though you'd have a hell of a time getting a toxic dose, if you use those, it's just not a good idea. So whenever you want to decide whether you're going to use a garden actually anywhere, but particularly in cities, first you consider the land use. If you've ever been in an orchard, you better pay attention to it. If there was an industry in your region in the city, better pay attention. If you're near a heavily trafficked highway, needs more attention. Several scientists and among the researchers working on this topic have shown that Malic 3 extracts a reasonably proportional amount of total lead, so you can use that usual soil test to measure nutrients, lead, cadmium, arsenic, zinc, so you could assess whether there's any unexpected or unknown problem based on chemical analysis. If the lead is high enough, you then need to get a bioaccessibility test for the lead, not just total, but a bioaccessible test. Right now, Nick Basta may be the only person who's offering that test commercially at Ohio State, but Ohio State, Penn State, University of Delaware are all offering the Malic at a quite reasonable price compared to engineering firms who give you total, and it's total, but they don't tell you what it means, so they haven't helped you an awful lot. I believe that based on all the stuff we've talked about, the low bioavailability of soil lead, particularly after it's in foods, the low uptake, except for those limited crops that I talked about, low-growing leafy vegetables, herbs, storage root crops like carrot, you can grow them on all soils. If it's above 400, you better switch to raised bed gardens for the sensitive accumulating crops. We always have to focus on keeping soil out of children's mouths, keeping it out of our homes. I haven't said anything about cadmium. Cadmium is usually such a low fraction of zinc that you can't accumulate enough cadmium to cause harm in a lifetime of eating high amounts of lettuce and spinach. Just because the ratio is so low that you would kill the crop if you had very much cadmium in it. Unfortunately, there are a few cities which gave away contaminated biosolids or had a stack emission that was affected by a nickel-cadmium battery waste that went into the sewage treatment plant and so on. so that there's a few areas where cadmium could be a risk. But again, this use a soil test, determine whether it needs attention. Don't give up gardening because you read somewhere that urban soils are contaminated. That's silly. We have enough research to be able to advise people that there's safe ways to garden. Let's use our sense, use our extension knowledge, and move people ahead with this very healthy and happy gardening experience. Thank you.
We have 2 minutes for questions. One and a half. Any questions for Rupert?
One question. There's some recent research in the past maybe a couple of years that some studies about the green leafy greens, they have particles, soil particles stick to the surface, and then when you analyze it, if you don't wash it very thoroughly, you get a very high concentration in the green leafy greens. And I wonder if they have any comments on that.
I have experience on that, and I think that it's only when the soil is high enough that the particles stuck on the leaf after you've washed it with the care of a home cook would be enough to raise the concentration, and it would still have the low bioavailability of food lead. If it was a soil particle, it's going to have a low bioavailability before it even got stuck on the leaf. So if the garden is above a certain level, then the predictability of what you're saying makes it so that we should grow the leafy greens and herbs. Low-growing things that get soil splash. It's not uptake, it's splash. And the particles stuck on the surface.